In this episode, I talk to one of my oldest and best friends, Liam, and we talk all about mental health. We talk about the stigma that is still out there, especially for young lads to talk about their mental health, the experiences that we've both been through, why there is still a stigma, and how we might change that. Okay, so Liam, why did you get involved with physio?
Yeah, so I did an undergraduate degree in sports and exercise science. Just always had an interest in the sort of mechanics of, like, you know, principles of training and things like that. And I've always been into sport. Like, you know, we used to train together a lot when we were kids and things.
Yeah, definitely.
And then I just, after I finished the degree, wanted to get a job quite quickly and fell into a company based in Ipswich, which was, and I worked as a rehab instructor. Sort of stumbled into that job a little bit, really, but I was very lucky that I did. So got a real taste for sort of rehabilitation and people that, you know, have injuries. Thought, yeah, I really like a bit of that. You know, I want to, you know, pursue this career in something like this, you know, and do a little bit more and get more on the sort of like the diagnostic side of things, you know, more along the medical path. So I did a 2-year master's degree in physiotherapy at University of Essex, and then straight away went back to the company that hired me as a rehab instructor. Lucky enough to get a job back with them, and for the past few years worked my way up. Now one of the senior musculoskeletal physiotherapists for the company, and still love it. Still, it's just sort of a career path that, as I say, sort of stumbled into it at first, and then just developed a real passion for it. Found I like talking to people, and it's very much a you know, person-centered, you know, profession. You see new people every single day, high numbers, high volumes, different people, different characters. Keeps it really interesting.
No, absolutely. I know, as a group of mates as well, like if any of us ever have any niggles or anything, you're the first person we contact. Say, oh, Liam, what about this? But that's what I wanted to come on to next, because we talk a lot as blokes about our physical health.
Yeah.
And as I said, you're our first port of call for that. But we don't always talk about our mental health as much.
No. Yeah.
And you must find it in your practice as well. Why are people, you know, more willing to talk about physical health than they are mental health?
It's a really, really good question. And I think it's something that is probably going to be discussed, you know, for years probably. And I think it's something that is becoming more and more, you know, prevalent as well, in terms of, you know, one of the things I think as well is people, for whatever reason, there seems to be less stigma around physical pain or physical disability. So in terms of someone has a you know, knee injury, or they've sustained an injury while playing a sport or something like that, it's one of those things. And this is, you know, speaking sort of anecdotally, I don't have any evidence to back this up, but it's interesting that people seem less ashamed of that type of injury, you know, that type of pain. And although they're struggling and it's limiting them in a day-to-day, you know, routine, they just have, there's no sort of real stigma around the, you know, like a knee injury or a shoulder injury. And people seem much, much happier to sort of talk about it and then get treatment from the right place at the right time. There seems to be zero stigma around it. You know, there's no judgment passed for, that person's got a knee injury. Crikey, they must be a bit odd. You know, the comments like that. And you just don't get that with that type of you know, pain and injury. I think, like, with mental health, it's really frustrating that there is such a stigma around it. That in the past, you know, you hear not very nice things about people that might have suffered depression or anxiety, and it sort of, you know, creates that negative stigma, and people just, that they're sometimes ashamed of it. They don't want to talk about it, and that leads to not seeking help at the right time, and not seeking help from the right person at the right time, and it can sort of snowball. I think, you know, you see it in friends and family that might suffer with these things, and it's like you said before. I think you've mentioned on this as well. If someone comes into a clinic with their arm in a sling, you know, people very much recognise that there's an injury in it. But when there's a problem with somebody's head, you know, I think sometimes people struggle to express it as well. We understand what might be going on.
Sorry, Liam, you've said something really interesting there, because while you're saying all that, it's almost like, it's like a label. Like, so when, if someone, like you said, you use the example of a knee injury, we then talk about, you know, rehabilitation and working on that knee injury to you know, make it stronger again, and then they can go and participate in the sport they want to. But when we talk about mental health, if someone has to have time off work, or you mentioned depression or anxiety, and then they work on themselves to you know, get to a better place again. It's almost like that label then sticks with them. And I've heard people like, oh, well, they're the crazy one, or they're the... Do you think it's, like along those lines?
That's a really good point. That's exactly what I was trying to sort of express with you. You've really summarised that really, really nicely. It's, I think that's exactly that. You don't, you know, typically take, if you take time off work because you've broken an ankle or something like that, or a knee injury, it's not then your colleagues might not mention it sort of, months down the line. Oh, do you remember when you took time off for your knee? You just don't really, you don't think, it's just one of those things. You just go with the flow and it happens and you move on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, like I say, it's weird how if you've had time off for a mental health problem, which is, absolutely as valid as any other type of physical impairment or problem, it does seem to stick with that person. It's, oh, do you remember that person had to have time off because they weren't coping, or it's really odd. It really is baffling, isn't it, why that has such a negative attachment to it.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. I'm really not sure why it's like that.
I mean, we might come to why maybe a little bit later when I ask some questions. We might discover that in this podcast as well. Who knows?
It's been a learning experience.
Well, we'll see. The next thing I wanted to mention about was perceptions around medication. So we talk about health and physical health. Well, you mentioned examples of people wanting to seek help for physical pain and they might need medication for that pain. But again, and when we talk about mental health, they might seek medication. And again, there's still a stigma around taking medication. Can you explain that a bit from your background around that?
Massively. Yeah. That is, again, really another really interesting sort of topic, really. It's more often than not, if someone comes in and they're struggling and it's pain, physical pain, that's limiting them from performing their daily activities or their much loved hobbies and things, as soon as a clinician such as myself sort of suggests, look, I think we need to, the pain seems to be the main issue here, that's what's limiting you from doing these things and going about your life normally, we really need to get on top of that pain. And we sort of explain it as a useful tool. We sort of say, look, sometimes taking regular paracetamol, providing it's safe to do so, if that takes the edge off your symptoms and it allows you to exercise a bit more regularly, it allows you to go to work without less, without as much discomfort, you can maybe sleep a bit better. Typically, it snowballs in a positive way and they start to improve, in a much more expected manner. It's a lot easier. It's much more of a smooth process for their recovery. But it's not perceived as strong to not deal with pain very well. And that's, that's another thing, but, it's madness to think that, if you're in pain, you're in pain. Everyone, we're only human. We're allowed to be in pain. But yeah, so then on to the taking medication for a mental health. So the way that I would see it is just as I would suggest taking something like simple pain relief or maybe stronger pain relief, which we get the GP involved with and things to help rehabilitate a physical injury, I think that taking medication for a mental health condition should be thought of as no different. Because if that then helps you, if it's your mental health which is causing you to suffer in your day-to-day routine and causing you to not function properly to the level that you would normally function at, then if taking medication helps to bring you back up to a functioning level and it helps you to get better sleep quality, do the things that you love, then I think it should absolutely be no different. It shouldn't be seen as any different or certainly shouldn't be seen as a weakness to take medication for a mental health condition. You wouldn't think, oh, that person's weak, they've got to take paracetamol for their knee pain. You just don't think like that. It's frustrating that I think there is a perception that it's seen as I'm a bit loopy, so I've got to take medication for my head, or I think it'd be important to think of it as a useful tool. It seems to be a one step of a ladder with many different parts to it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's that Maslow's hierarchy of needs that we mentioned before. I'll talk about that ladder. I won't go into too much detail about that now, because that could be, we could do a podcast just around that.
Talk about that alone. Yeah,
we could. Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned there about tools and things. We're going to come on to like tools or outlets in a little bit. Yeah. So I want to take us back to school now. We obviously went to the same school. We both met each other in year seven. Both came from primary schools where we didn't know anybody at the secondary schools.
Yeah, it's a big jump, big change.
Spoke to each other on the induction day, and then you went off to Australia for 6 months. So then I really was on my own.
Left you on your own. Sorry about that, mate.
That's all right. You came back, and then obviously we've been mates ever since. And when we was in school, if we were sitting, we had quite a large group of friends. We were in, quite a, I don't know the term you'd use, but I don't like the word manly and things like that. But at that time, maybe that's what we try to perceive ourselves as.
Yeah, definitely.
If we sat around the lunch or, you know, out on the field or whatever we were getting up to, and we started to talk about our mental health, I'm not sure really how that conversation would have gone down. What are your kind of thoughts on that and around like mental health chat in school? Like, did it happen or why didn't it happen?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. It never happened, did it? You know, there were days where, you know, we all struggled and you have whatever school stresses and school places a lot of stress on people for many different reasons. And yeah, we would never talk about it. And I think the culture was a bit different now, you know, a bit different then compared to what it is now. There has been, thankfully, a little bit of a shift, you know, in the right direction. Maybe not yet enough, but back then it was, you know, it's sometimes it's that sort of like toxic masculinity, isn't it? You know, in terms of why it's not, you know, we've got to be tough, we've got to be strong, you know, we're full of testosterone going through puberty and things. It's, you know, you're not going to be seen as popular if you've got, you know, if he seems a bit soft or whatever. And so you just bottle it up and you never talk about these things. And and when you think back at that, that sounds dreadful to say that, to verbalize it. You know, it would just be the right thing to do, was seen to bottle these feelings up and just not talk to your friends. And sometimes these things are really hard to talk about to your family, and talking to your friend sometimes is much, much easier. You know, you go through a lot more together with your friend. You spend potentially more time of the week with them at school, you know, more of your active hours and stuff. And I think there was fear to talk about things like that when we were at school. You'd be branded, you know, a wimp, or, and you just couldn't be seen to be talking about these things. And I hope, and I haven't, you know, I know that obviously you spend a lot of time in schools and things, but, you know, I've not spent time around teaching kids or anything like that. So I don't know what it's like now at schools, but I would hope that it is easier now to share these types of things and, you know, a bit more supportive and things. It's interesting, but when you think about it, even like, not just with your friends, but even sometimes, and it's not a criticism, because, you know, majority of the teachers we had at the school were fantastic. You know, I know that you and I had some really positive experiences with teachers, you know, really sort of translates to how we behave as adults and things. But sometimes you felt you couldn't speak to teachers, and there was still that sort of that toxic masculinity, like, oh, you know, run it off, you'll be all right.
Yeah,
like,
get on with it.
You'll be a boy, you know, boys will be boys, you know. And it sometimes it makes you feel a bit confused about it. You know, it's like, oh, well, I'm struggling here. Like, but maybe I shouldn't be struggling. Maybe I'm just being stupid. And you bury it down and things. And that's, you know, we know that's not healthy. So
you're absolutely, you've hit the nail on the head so much there about speaking to friends is sometimes much easier than speaking to your family, and, you know, teachers as well. I there was probably only two that, and I don't mind naming them, Phil Coleman and Kerris Emery, who I could have spoken to, and I did speak to. But apart from that, it was still that stigma of, I'm not sure whether, as well, now looking at it, whether they would have felt comfortable talking about it either.
You've got to look at it on the other side, haven't you?
Yeah, that's how I see it.
And Phil was one of the teachers that I used to feel very comfortable talking to as well. Like, it's funny. And what I suppose what's even funnier about that is that he's one of the strongest, toughest blokes that I can remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, we both felt most comfortable talking to him about things.
I want to come on to now, because I think you touched on there, obviously, in schools, I think it will make a difference if they can look up to people and, you know, they see people like us in our 20s, two blokes talking about their mental health. Now, I've openly, I don't like to go on about it too much, because I don't want it to become, you know, like a Kieran show or look at poor Kieran, but because so much is, I'm very lucky. I've had very supportive parents, great group of friends. But obviously when I was at school, I did try and take my own life, and I got into such a bad place. And I reflect back on that now. And I was thinking about this earlier before speaking to you. And the only way I can describe it is, I remember once I'd been found, once I went through like an episode, I remember just looking out the window and crying and just feeling so, so sad. But I didn't know how to explain how I felt sad.
No.
I didn't want anyone to see me sad, because I didn't want to be a burden to anyone. And it was just, I didn't have the language to express how I was feeling. Now, me and you have been open with each other, and it's part of why we're doing this. could you describe any battles that you may have had with your own mental health?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and kudos for you talking about those things as well, because I remember the times, well, you know, I remember when you weren't in a good place and things, and you know, we like to think back and think that we were there for you and things, but
massively.
But also, we didn't understand it so well. You know, we didn't understand these situations, and it, you know, looking back, you do wish that you could have been a bit, that we, you know, I could have been a bit more approachable. Maybe I think that's, you know, it's something that, you know, it's easy to look back on, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to speak either, so it's that two way, but
it works two ways, though, isn't it? You know, you shouldn't feel like it's like your burden to carry, so to speak. You know, it's we should have really reached out to you, you know, and things like that, and when things weren't right. And I think now we would recognize that a lot, so much better.
Yes.
If you ever feel like that again and things, and that's a huge difference. But yeah, I mean, I take sertraline medication at the moment to help with mixed depression and anxiety disorder, if you want to brand it.
I don't like the word disorder, but
no, I know. I
mean, that's how it's described. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, exactly. And doing the work that I do, you know, and now being in a senior position of healthcare and things, it was really difficult at first to talk about, you know, and I felt that, you know, and sort of anxiety and depression sort of manifest so differently for different people. For me, it made me feel like I wasn't good enough, like I say, but, you know, like you said, like burden and things, and you feel you've been a burden to your, if you're feeling low mood or you're worrying a lot about things, you feel like you've been a burden to your friends, to your family. At work, you know, I'd constantly worry that I've not made the right decision or that I've done something wrong. And those thoughts, they just resonate round and round and round, and you can't escape them. And it's difficult to sleep. You feel tired, and it's so easy to get yourself into a negative spiral, and anything could then trigger you off. And I think when I've always been a bit of a, you know, what you might call as a worrier, if you like. I've always overthought things and, you know, thought far too deeply into things that I probably shouldn't have worried about and things.
Yeah.
But it came to a head about a year ago when I had a, you know, what you'd probably class as a bit of a breakdown, where I just had a complete sort of, you know, episode where I was no good to myself, no good to my wife, to my family, and I had to, you know, take time away from work. I just changed jobs to a very good private company, and I had to quit, because at the time I sort of pretended it was for a different reason, like that, you know, like it was you know, you call up work, you know, I've got tummy ache, you know, and because I was just so scared to say that it was because I'd had a breakdown, that I was sad, that I was you know, it was sort of like a depression and anxiety led problem as opposed to a physical problem, and that was so foolish to be like that, but it's just how I felt. And I took sertraline for a little bit, then I didn't take it for long enough. I thought I was better, didn't really take it that seriously. Spoke to a, you know, counselor a couple of times. No, I'm much better now. Thankfully got my old job back and things, and I'm still with them now. And as a side note, my new employer is, I talk to them about it all the time. They're so much more attuned to my needs, and they're much more accepting of some of the struggles that someone like myself might go through. And then it happened again sort of recently, really, sort of before the COVID sort of outbreak and things. I was trying to seek a bit of help, and all the GP practices shut and things. So again, it came to another peak, and I lost about 5 kilos, I think it was, of weight, just through loss of appetite, not eating, not sleeping. I was throwing up, couldn't keep food down, just not because I was physically unwell, because this sort of mental issue was manifesting physically. So made a decision, you know, but I recognized the signs a little bit early this time around. Speak to the GP and sort of, yeah, look, and I said to them, I think I need to take something routinely, because clearly I'm not coping very well. I'm not addressing these issues. And I think some of the issue with sort of, for myself anyway, because I know that what I have is probably classed as a, you know, mild to moderate you know, set of symptoms. There's people out there that struggle far, far greater than I do. And but it is such an intrinsic battle. Like, people can give you advice and they can give you things to focus on and give you techniques. And that's been fantastic. I'm now in regular contact with a mental health trust out my way in Cambridge. And I have routine sort of checkups every 2 weeks ongoing. I have an online profile, which I fill out journals and blogs, how I'm feeling, how I'm doing, recording good days and bad days, taking sort of a sort of fairly average dose of sertraline on a daily basis. And I'll probably be taking that for the next year, probably, just to sort of really get it working into the system. It's safe to do it that way as well and things. And I feel so much more on top of it. And I now feel so foolish for not talking about these things. Although my family knew that I had this problem last year, I just didn't talk to them again. And I knew that talking to anyone made me feel better. Mm. And I fell straight back into the same problem, same habits of not talking about it, bottling it up, trying to hide it, trying to pretend that you're doing fine and you're not. All I've got is myself to blame, because my family and my friends, they were there. They were ready to help me, ready to listen.
Liam, sorry, all I would say on that is, I mean, I know you obviously personally, so I know that you're a very hard critique of yourself, because you're a deep thinker. You're a very deep thinker. And although, like, obviously you're taking that on, I think it's how society doesn't allow us, and that is society that makes us feel or puts that pressure on us to then not speak. So then we feel foolish. But actually, I think it's society where it's not that open, you know, speak about our feelings, maybe even more so for blokes. Even if we have a job that if we speak, they're going to think that we can't do the job that we want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's not foolish.
No. And that's the thing. And that's how I felt. But, you know, as I say, talking to you, you know, that's just brilliant having you as, you know, one of my closest friends and things. And I completely see now that it was foolish to think that it was foolish to not, you know. And that's why I think doing what you're doing is such an important role, you know. And it's so important that, you know, I'm not being brave. I don't think that I'm being brave talking about it. I think I'm just trying to normalize it, you know. And I know that, you know, people think, or they say, oh, you know, it's really brave, really brave. Really important first step to start talking about it. But it shouldn't be brave. It should be normal, isn't it?
I know. 100%. 100%. You know, I do think you're brave. And I, as a mate, I'm sitting here and I'm proud of you for wanting to do this, like immensely. However, I totally agree with you. I'd love to look in five years' time, and that it's not seen as brave because we just talk about it.
There's so many positives to draw out for it to be a normal situation, you know, to be as generic as a Sunday league footballer that sprained his ankle, you know, or her ankle, you know. It needs to be that sort of, you know, at that level. I know you've touched it as well, like, but it's a basic human need. It's, you know, just like we do sustain physical injuries, which I see that I deal with day to day. It should be no different for someone like myself to then go to a professional who's far better qualified than I am to help me out when I need it, you know, and things. And it shouldn't be seen as any different.
If you're at work and you're just overwhelmed with anxiety or depression.
Exactly.
And you need to stop to get back into a better place. It needs to be exactly the same.
Absolutely. You know, and people seem to not have too much of a problem going to their GP for a fit note, you know, or, you know, and to say that, you know, I've really, really hurt my back, or I've hurt my leg, and I can't do my work as a, you know, as a tradesperson, or, you know, a manual worker, somewhere where you need to be physically fit and able and things. And people seem to be okay to take a couple of weeks off. Like I say, they stop, they let their body recover, they go to rehab, they go to the physio, they take time out of their day, of their week, to go and see their physio, to see whoever that can help them and guide them through their recovery. But it just doesn't happen enough exactly as you said, you know, someone has a mental health need or a mental health sort of lapse and they're struggling. And it doesn't even have to get to the point like yourself and me manifesting physically, you know, that's we've let that go too far. It needs to be caught earlier and say, look, I'm recognizing some signs here. I need to stop. I need to change something. And I completely agree with you. Yeah, I think it's so important to try as hard as we can, you know, people like yourself to you know, to really promote that it is normal. We are all human, and regardless of how strong or tough someone looks or feels, they will be going through very, very similar battles at some points in their life.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I just wanted to come back to something you did mention about struggle and saying one thing that I'm really passionate about is people will compare their struggles and say things like you did, and wrongly or rightly, they'll say things like, my struggle's not as much as someone else. However, I would say no one's struggle is more or less anyone else. It's your struggle. It's their struggle. And actually, what that means to you is important to you. And we live in a world, I did another podcast earlier about another subject. We live in a world with social media and everything else where we feel like we have to compare ourselves all of the time. Yeah, and our mental health is our mental health.
Yeah.
And it's about recognizing, you know, it's not
massively
I struggle less or more than someone else. Yeah. I struggle. We can all struggle. And it's okay. I know it's a phrase that's out there a lot, but it's okay to say, I'm not okay.
Right, okay. Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
So
what's really interesting and what you mentioned there, though, is you made me think of something then, again, linking it to my role when I treat people for their physical health and physical well-being. In terms of everybody's, you know, it's your struggle when things. And that's so key because that's exactly what we tell somebody who comes in with a seemingly routine Achilles tendinopathy. You know, they've got some Achilles pain. They've gone running too much. They've not given their Achilles tendon time to recover and adjust. They've not done their training. But I don't treat every single Achilles tendon the same. I don't treat, you know, if I have five patients come in a day with the same Achilles problem, I will address every single Achilles different because it's not just treating the tissue. There's a person attached to that tendon. And that person has other needs. That person might rely on their running for their mental health, you know. Mm-hmm. And if they can't do the running, they might, you know, that might be the reason why they're not letting their body recover because they're pushing themselves too hard. It's really good for them, you know. And they might come in and they're despair. They're like, if I can't run, I'm gonna, you know, struggle here. So then that's when you say you suggest like, right, well, cycling is far easier, you know. I know at the moment swimming pools are shut and things, but you know, swimming. There's so many other things that we could signpost someone towards, and you know, and I would advise very different treatments, all in the same ballpark, but very different treatments because there's a person attached to that injury, just like there's a person attached to a mental health problem. And like you say, it's an individual, you know, anxiety, but how that manifests and how that someone deals with it is going to be different.
Yeah,
it's going to be, isn't it?
I just wanted to finish, Liam, with I was going to ask you, how are we going to change the stigma? But I think we have touched on it lots. But if you could just, you know, sum that up in maybe a paragraph. I know that's tricky. Put you on the spot.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're part of that process because we're chatting now.
Yeah,
but how do we change the stigma around mental health?
I think, and I know it sounds a bit cliche and things, but honestly think talking about it more. I think that is, in my mind, that seems to be one of the easiest and most accessible ways to change stigma around it is to talk about it, normalize it in conversation. You know, as we say, although it's really positive, like we said already, you know, previously, it's seen as, you know, it has to be seen as really brave or really bold to come out. Oh, you know, it shouldn't be seen like that. You know, we're not making ourselves seem vulnerable. We're just being honest with ourselves and honest that, as I say, try and normalize it. You know, it's it doesn't mean that I'm crazy to have to feel a bit depressed and anxious a lot of the time. And it doesn't mean that I'm broken or I'm beyond recovery if I've had two or three episodes of you know, bad anxiety and depression attacks and things. And the more we talk about it, the easier it is for people like us to deal with it, but also for other people that might not be so comfortable talking about it. But if they can see that, you know, I'm going to blow my own trumpet, like two successful blokes, you know, can still function and pay bills and go to work. If we can still do all those things, then, you know, it's just having anxiety and depression and things is just a part of us. It's normal. It's not a problem.
No, absolutely. You've summed that up so well. And I think I'd just finish by adding to that, you know, you don't have to record a podcast to talk about it. You don't have to even, you know, talk out loud. It's about reaching out to those people that are close to you and the people that you can trust. And the main message, which you summed up so well, is to talk. The way the world sees things at the moment, you are very brave for coming and speaking. So thank you very much, Liam.
That's no problem. Not a problem at all. Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Cheers, mate.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.